When I was growing up, our family went camping a lot. We started out, really, when we were in elementary school, camping in tents, and we even had a teepee for a little while. And then we got this trailer to pull behind our station wagon. It was 17 feet long, I think, and 7 people could sleep in it. So as an adult, I still love camping, and I've changed a little bit in my adult life. I've learned to go wilderness camping. Now, there may be many of you who are not campers, and you might think that camping is camping is camping, but no, 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 this is not true. There are many kinds of camping. There's tent camping and car camping and pop-up tent camping and trailer camping and streamline camping and cabin camping, and probably some other kinds that I'm leaving out. But wilderness camping, I found, renews me. It restores my soul. It helps me to fully open my eyes to the ever-present sense of God with me and God in our world, in all of creation, and then go on and carry that Spirit of God into my life anew. In our Old Testament lesson today, Moses and the Israelites are in the wilderness, and they don't have water. In this part of the story, it is early in their journey, as we know, which lasted over 40 years. They were wandering, seeking, following God, not knowing or understanding what the promised land could be like or when they might come upon it. And the people are afraid in this wilderness. And it is hard for them to believe in God's presence with them at all. Their eyes are closed in their fear. And they are complaining against Moses. Why did you bring us out here into the desert, out of Egypt, just to kill us and kill our children and our livestock with thirst? Their fear and their complaints thus rendered Moses afraid. And I don't blame either them or him. What is the wilderness place? What are the wilderness places and times in all of our lives? Certainly the loss of a child might be one, or the battle with a terminal illness, or living through times of great change in our life, losing a job or retirement or moving from one city to another. These can all be times of wilderness for us. The death of a parent or a spouse, or perhaps even harder, that person living on with the disease of Alzheimer's. Any loss of our own health and well-being. All of these can be wilderness experiences. I wonder if you can immediately think of the ones and list some of the times in your life when you felt you were in the wilderness. Or I wonder, are you in one now? For none of us, I fear, are strangers to wilderness experiences. The impact of being in the wilderness, as we saw it in the Old Testament, included fear and anxiety and feelings of loss and abandonment. And there are other things that seem to happen to us as well during such times as these. One is that we often become critical of ourselves. We experience self-judgment or guilt. For example, what have I done that caused God to allow this to happen to me? Or we might simply say, it's all my fault. This is my fault. If I had not done this or that. It's really easy to fall into this sense of negativity toward the self or this pattern of self-judgment. Because the wilderness of our crises in our lives are painful times when our spirit can't seem to realize the fullness of life. If we don't choose that option of self-judgment, then we often tend to want to blame ourselves or someone else in the midst of fear and deep sadness in our lives. It is so hard for us to find the way to give grace to ourselves for allowing our pain and our sadness to simply be what it is, to simply just be what it is. So besides feeling the emotional devastation of the impact of a crisis we might be in, we often experience an overwhelming sense of the loss of self during wilderness periods in our lives. We forget who we are. We don't know what we're supposed to do, where we're going, what the future might look like. And then we lose ourselves not only in that story, but in our emotions, in self-judgment, and in blaming. Now, lots of people who know me know that my vacations are often treks into nature, and they say, "You call that a vacation? Why give up a bathroom and hot water and a refrigerator and electricity?" And my quick answer is the remarkable and renewing and sustaining power of being away, 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 and immersed in God's creation, and being truly quiet. Instead of hearing the hustle and bustle of people and cars and lights of the city, just hearing the hustle and bustle of the wind or of moving water or the movement and sound of creatures. And even if I'm lucky enough to hear the slowing down of my own heart, hearing my heart and soul at rest, it is a powerful renewal for me and a way to reconnect with myself fully. But of course, there's something very different about going out into the wilderness by choice for renewal, and on the other hand, being thrust into a wilderness of pain and loss unexpectedly. When that happens to us, just like what happened to the Israelites, when we are moved into a wilderness experience, not of our own choosing, but rather by the chances and changes of life, in these times it seems like all we can do is hang on for dear life. What I've noticed in thinking about my own lost places, looking back, is that much of the time, I think I have my eyes closed. I think it's common when we are in spiritual or life-threatening or devastating crisis, we might be clenching our fists, we might be sleeping a lot more than usual, we might be sleeping a lot less than usual. We might spend a lot of time lamenting what is going on or simply weeping. And we might even be shaking our fist at God for having allowed this to be. How can we do anything more than this when we are facing death or abandonment or great pain? We can just hang on for dear life, and we often have our eyes closed. At times like this, perhaps the most that we can do is try to reach into our soul and our psyche and just remember that God is. God still is. God is present even in turmoil. God's promises can sustain us even when we cannot see or hear or sense God in any way whatever. And we might find ourselves at best waiting and watching for this time to pass. At worst, we are frantic and we become more and more ill. At best, we wait and we watch for the end of the pain and for the beginning of new life. It always comes. New life always comes. Knowing that we, all of us, have had or will have wilderness experiences, and that we will talk about the wilderness in Jesus' life every year at this time of Lent, I'd like to propose to you that we could possibly change our own wilderness experiences. We could impact them to make them more endurable, more gentle, less frightening, if we intentionally prepare for them over and over again during our lives. There is, however, a prerequisite for such preparation. We have to prepare for wilderness times only when we are not in a wilderness time of life. And herein may lie the gift of the Lenten season. The seasons of the church year offer us many wonderful ways to reflect on the passages of our own lives while we contemplate the passages of Jesus' life. And Lent is a time when, if we are not in a hanging on for dear life mode, we can make preparation for such a time, which will indeed come for each of us. What I'm suggesting is spiritual exercise. And there are many, many options for this. I would propose just two simple things to you this morning that we might do over and over again, that we might practice when we are not in the wilderness. The first thing is eyes wide open. Eyes wide open. And the second thing is to get off of your own back. Stop beating up on yourselves. This eyes open exercise is a way of finding and knowing God in the day-to-day experiences of our lives. And it is necessary, it is essential to us, so that we never lose God when we are in the wilderness. It is really no different, this eyes wide open exercise, really no different than the need for exercising our bodies or our minds. It is simply an exercise about our souls, about soul making, and about eternal life. Just like today in this service when we celebrate baptism, participating in the sacraments is another exercise of soul making, leading us unto eternal life. Our soul is the part of us that internalizes and lives with the promise of eternal life. And so why wouldn't we all want to make the exercise of our souls a top priority in our lives, for all of our lives? Here's what happens to me now when I take a couple of weeks and go away and wilderness camp. I prepare carefully. I travel lightly with a really good first aid kit. I open my eyes and I enter creation to be fed by the wonder of God. Now please know, my friends, please know that I am not suggesting that anyone here needs to go camping in order to get close to God. This is just a metaphor, okay? And the most important part of the metaphor is eyes wide open. The challenging thing about eyes wide open is that sometimes we are too tired or are not up to keeping our eyes open to the world around us. Sometimes what we see is not restorative, but painful. The parent who strikes the child in the grocery store. The face of the man or woman pacing the exit ramp on the highway asking for change. We can't look at everything all of the time. But if we make a habit of closing our eyes, we can forget how to face ourselves. We can forget how to face the challenging things that come to us in life, and we miss out on some good training for our own times of wilderness. And most especially, when we look away too often, We forget or simply miss out on some chances to see God with us, God in our midst. Let us practice opening our eyes as much as possible that we might recognize the presence and the promises of God. In our long, long, long gospel lesson this morning, and this kind of long sermon, Jesus talks with the Samaritan woman, and he talks to her in such a way as to prove to her who he is and how her life might be changed by this encounter with him. And just before Jesus reveals his true identity as the Messiah, he says, "God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and in truth." A few verses before that, it says that the Spirit of God in our lives can be like the rushing water of a spring coming forth. My friends, we need these wilderness experiences in our lives because we need to be sure that we can find God who is spirit, God who is truth, in our lives, in our souls. We need over and over again to practice finding God in spirit and truth in our lives, in our relationships, in our neighborhoods, in our church life, and indeed in the entire world. So that when we feel that we have nothing, when we feel that we might be lost, we will know that God, who is spirit and who is truth, will sustain us. If you're in a truly wilderness experience now in your life, not by your own choosing, just trust. Just wait and watch. Perhaps you can cling to that which you recall as your notion of God, or any promise you have heard about God, or the hope of God for the future. It is difficult to find spirit and truth when we feel as if we are barely surviving. Wait and watch and trust. You may see the signs if you are able to open your eyes. But if you are not in a wilderness place right now in your lives, go there. Take a little risk, go out into the world and open your eyes, your hearts, your ears, your minds, and look for the wonder of God. Look for the presence of God. Use this rest of this time of Lent as a time to practice. Open your eyes and ears to the spirit of the truth of God, the spirit of God within you, the spirit of God among us. Do not judge yourselves, and when you do, forgive yourself. And start over. Your soul can learn to carry this presence, this spirit, this truth of God throughout your lives.